Hello everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, Content Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news from the week beginning 20th of May. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story is taken from Morgan McKinley's 2019 Barometer of Workplace Mental Health in the UK, which suggests that more than a third of respondents said that their employers don't provide any formal mental health support, while a further 34% are unaware whether any support is actually available from their organisations. However, the research also shows that even when there are formal workplace support programs available, staff do not make use of them. Morgan McKinley People Director Andrea Webb said, "There's a historical stigma that having a mental health issue is considered a weakness." She added, "The fundamental foundations are in place at many organisations, but more needs to be done to improve confidence around the discussion of mental health issues at work so that individuals can get the help they require." Also, the report noted that only 2% of respondents believe that productivity at work is not affected when an individual is struggling with their mental health. Kate, my question is, what can leaders do to boost that confidence around mental health issues at work?
Well, I think the first thing we can do is challenge this idea of productivity being something that everybody's 100% productive if they don't have a mental health issue. We know there are lots of physical conditions that might impair, or not impair indeed, one's productivity at work. If we look at the sort of jobs that are going to disappear, that are going to be replaced by artificial intelligence, they are the routine, easy to measure aspects of organisational work. The things that are not going to be easily replaced are ones that involve empathy, an ability to understand how somebody else is feeling and respond appropriately, to be able to engage with the emotional aspects of organisational life. And surely, getting better at talking about mental health is absolutely part of that. And as we have with Business in the Community, Mind, Mercer, we've been campaigning for so long to make mental health conversations part of the everyday conversation that take place in organisations that are akin to the sorts of conversations one has about some of one's physical ailments.
Thank you, Kate. If moving on to our second story, this comes from a press release on the 20th of May from Deloitte entitled "Over Half of New Dads Struggling to Secure Flexibility at Work." Over 2,000 working dads between the ages of 24 to 40 were interviewed for this research in conjunction with Daddy Life, and key issues highlighted in the research include: fewer than one in five new dads are granted a change in working patterns when they request it, and 45% of working fathers regularly experience employment tensions from their employer when trying to balance their work and family life. My question is, Kate, what more can organisations do?
Well, I think the most disturbing part of this research is the fact that so many new dads are being declined when they ask to adapt their working patterns. We know the right to request flexible working has been around for a while. I think what's particularly interesting here is that how few fathers are being granted a change in their working patterns when they request it. That suggests that there's a real resistance in organisations to support fathers in contributing to their share of childcare. As we've often said, making things a women's or a mother's problem in this case isn't going to sort them out. So it's only when it's seen as an organisational problem, by supporting fathers in those early years when they need to be much more available, much more present for their children, we're going to increase loyalty, they're going to be happier at work. All of the things that we want, if going back to the previous story, we're really taking productivity seriously. I think those fathers that are reporting tensions when trying to balance the work and family life, I think that probably is more a function of how difficult it is to balance work with a young family. And I think that's whether you're a mother or a father. I think we'd perhaps see even a higher response here if we ask the mother. So the ball is really in the organisation's court. Look at these statistics, question why you're resisting helping fathers in this way, and look at different ways of working so these fathers can be engaged in both their home and work lives.
Thank you, Kate. Our final story is taken from the recent Google report, Working Together When We're Not Together. The report found that effectiveness and productivity as a whole were not affected by remote distributed working, but actually making a distributed environment work is not easy and does present challenges. One of these challenges is communication, and the report emphasised the importance of good communication for remote teams and how leaders must help remote teams feel connected with one another and with the organisation. Kate, how might leaders do this? How might leaders help remote teams be better connected?
I think when we talk about the communication problem, as though communication is a single thing, we know that we're not going to solve it by saying we'll improve communication. I think we have to say, what sorts of communication are we going to improve and how are we going to do it? We know face-to-face communication is probably the most effective because of you pick up all the cues of body language, tone of voice, everything that helps contribute to that understanding between the people trying to have a conversation. If you replace that with email, for example, as is so often the case, how much richness of that communication is lost. So what remote teams need to do is, how close can we get to that face-to-face communication? And of course, video calling is absolutely one of those things that they should be the first call. If you can't do a video call, do a voice call, but use email as an absolute last resort if you want to communicate. Similarly, you have to work very hard at helping people get to know each other socially. Where you can have a chat in the lift or at the water cooler or at the coffee machine in real life, so much more difficult when people are hundreds of miles apart. But you have to find ways to do it. And we hear all different sorts of stories of how this is achieved. Pizza night, where everybody obviously buys their own pizza, but they all eat them at the same time. Having a particular communication channel, for example, say WhatsApp, that they only use for social interaction. It's not easy, and I think that's the lesson that people have to learn. You have to work at it and you have to keep working at it. And every time there's a new team member, you almost have to start all over again, because there is no real substitute for face-to-face without an awful lot of thought and hard work.
Thank you, Kate. Now, we cannot finish without mentioning Eurovision, the most watched TV show after sporting events. It was encouraging to see how well the technology worked. And what I'd like to ask Kate is, did you enjoy Eurovision? And what lessons does the technology used by Eurovision have for leadership?
I'm glad you mentioned Eurovision, because obviously it's a huge spectacle. And the fact that Australia is involved means it's much more than just Europe. What was brilliant, of course, was the technology working. How often have we been on conference calls or trying to connect with people in other countries and they can't hear us or we can't hear them? It also, okay, we didn't know what was going on behind the scenes or how much resource was put into that, but that worked brilliantly. And to me, the real lesson of the evening was how much you can achieve when there is a willingness to cooperate, a willingness to collaborate, and all actually underpinned, in this case, by being about fun, being about entertainment, but how much easier work is when there's an element of enjoyment to it.
Well, thank you, Kate. Thank you for your comments on leadership and your comments on Eurovision. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.